Let's see what the stew has for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, the Gnome Stew's tabletop gaming advice podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we'd better be good.
This episode is brought to you by our awesome Patreon backers like the amazing Bruce Cordell, Gavin, and Matthew Arbo.
Today we have myself, Ange, Jared, Senda, and Head Gnome John, and we're going to talk about actual play podcasts and shows. Before we dive into that main topic, though, let's ask our Get to Know a Gnome question. What is a game or character from your past that you think would have made a fantastic episode of an actual play podcast? Why don't we start with Jared?
Funny you should ask this, because last weekend I ran a one-shot of Senda's game for my local gaming group.
What? Nice. I'm so excited!
We had this incredibly awesome session of Love and Justice, and literally at the end of that, I looked around the table and went, we should have recorded that, and everyone agreed.
Love and Justice is almost always worth recording, in my experience. I'm so happy it was awesome.
It was great.
How about you, Senda?
I feel like when you ask me this, it's a trick question. Because I record at least about 75% of the games that I play are being recorded. So like trying to find one that should have been recorded that wasn't, I really enjoy actually playing not recording because it changes the experience of gaming a little bit to have the mic on. Camden, who is also a gnome, ran the most amazing police procedural noir game that we just finished our last session together that was very intense and so many feels and so much mystery and all of the things, and it would have made a wonderful podcast. I'm perfectly happy I didn't record it because I record everything else. But, you know.
You need, like, the stealth podcast recording, you know? Like, get the signed after the fact, but, like, do it where nobody knows they're actually performing.
Right. It's hard, though.
How about you, John?
Well, you know what? I'll just keep this being the Senda show. And the game of Love and Justice that I ran at Origins, which was the Sailor Scouts of Sunnydale, where a new group of Sailor Scouts got sent to deal with, like, Negaverse energies they were finding in this small California town. It was just, like, hilarious throughout. Everybody loved it. Everybody was a fan of Buffy. And they finally played it, like, one character had a crush on Spike, one character had a crush on Willow, so they got to be the damsels in distress that these Sailor Scouts went and, you know, saved. But they were animal-themed. So the one sailor became Sailor Horse, and she, like, runs in, beats down the siren. That's what the enemies were off of Spike, and goes, "Jump on my back!" And Spike jumps on, but his shirt gets ripped. So it ends with her running away in the moonlight with Spike, with his, like, shirt being ripped and flowing around him, romance novel style cover, and the players just making horsey clop hooves with their hands. This is the best moment of my life. Wow.
I'm so happy. I feel like this is the part where I have to say you can download Love and Justice for free on DriveThruRPG.
Look at us, stealth promotions.
Now that you've both said it, I just have to slip it in, right? What about you, Ange?
For me, I think I gotta go back. I gotta go back probably about 10, 12 years, and it was the first Eberron campaign I was in. My friend TJ was running it, and it was the first game where the game group I'm in kind of gelled together, and we just had a really good group of characters, and there was just this one session where it was basically the item we had gone on a quest for had been stolen from us, and we track the people who stole it down to one of the, I forget the exact thing they call them in Eberron, but the trains that run in Eberron?
Lightning rails.
The lightning rail. It was a lightning rail train, and we got on the train just as it was leaving the station to hunt down the thieves. And it was just like this whole scene of, like, you know, half the party on horseback chasing the train, or, you know, Velociraptor back, because we did have a halfling riding a Velociraptor, and, like, going through the train trying to find the thieves and just realizing that my character was not lawful good. She was not lawful good. She was most definitely chaotic good. But that whole session was just so magical that we still talk about it today.
You kind of want it immortalized and like saved and preserved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's like I could see that session being like an actual play podcast. But let's get into our main topic. Actual play podcasts are becoming a bigger and bigger part of the hobby, and they're changing the way games are interacted with on some levels. This goes for everything from people becoming fans of games they're not even playing, to playing games as if they're being watched and recorded even when they're not. Not to mention new games getting recorded and allowing GMs to see how to run a game before they bring it to a table. It's just, it's kind of a whole different ballgame in some ways, and we thought it would be an interesting topic to bring to the podcast.
I think we all have some opinions, because, you know, Senda has been running an actual play podcast for years, and it's one of the few that before I recruited Senda, I really, really listened to.
Aw.
And
I like this episode of the Gnomecast, in case we're not clear. Just keep talking. It's great.
But yeah, there is so much ground here. And of course, this was sparked by your article about mm-hmm. the recent sort of goings-on with Critical Role and how that changed and how the fandom reacts to it. But yeah, there's so much stuff here. I know I definitely have opinions on this, and I'm going to need you all to hit the grognard buzzer when you're like, all right, John, you're just being an old man yelling at clouds. Because I do have some feelings that are like that, but like, I'm also like, I love what this is doing for the industry, and also I see some danger points, and I'm like, oh, this is somewhat changing how people interact with this. How will that play out?
Well, you know, that's kind of the story of the internet age in general. It opens a lot of doors and creates a lot of opportunities, but there's also this, you know, every coin has two sides, and there's always this darker side to, you know, some of the changes that come to us from this changing world we're living in.
Yeah.
But let's get back to the gaming.
Well, so I have opinions on actual play, like my actual just baseline opinion about actual play, and this is why I started She's a Super Geek, right? Is that it is a tool that you can use as a GM to learn about a lot of things, and that it's a tool that we can use as a community to basically like throw things out there like representation. So it's like, it's a thing because you can throw out there a representation of a way that you like to play games and other people can catch on to that. So that's like, when we talk about like One Shot, that is a bunch of improvisers and like really awesome people playing games, and they're like really, really good at it, making it fun and entertaining. And it's something that changed the way that I thought about GMing, right? Because I started listening to that podcast. I was like, oh, I don't have to prep and do all this stuff that makes me miserable. Like, I could totally run games. This is awesome. But then my show, like, you know, riffing off of that, is very specifically about women, or, you know, folks with an X, honestly, running games so that people can see that. Because one of the things that I think that we lack is a lot of representation of marginalized genders in leadership roles in the gaming community. And so it's a thing where you can actually take, because it's media and you're throwing it out there to the world, you are throwing a representation out to the world. And whether you're doing it intentionally, like I am, or whether you're just throwing it out there because it's cool and fun, like, you are putting a representation out there of gaming in our community and how it can work. So it can be a good way to bring people in. It can be a good way to show other people, like, people like you play these games and you can do it too, which is the part of it that I really, really love, right? Those are all my feels about the good stuff, though, right? Like, I haven't personally experienced the underbelly, which I'm very grateful for. Like, She's a Super Geek is small enough that most of the time people are like, whatever. One time we left an episode on a terrible cliffhanger and everybody was like, Senda, why? But that was it, right? Like, nobody was calling me and like harassing me and berating me or something. They were all just like, what do you mean that's the end of the episode? Like, well, that's just it. Like, we didn't play anymore. I don't know, man.
I do wonder if there's a little bit of a difference between the actual plays that do the one shots and actual plays that focus on longer running campaigns. Because in the, you know, yeah, in the one shots, I'll still get invested in what's going on in the game and the characters, but it's temporary.
Yeah. Are you stealing my lines?
Are you stealing your lines? Yeah. But with the campaigns, and like this is kind of what we saw with what happened on Critical Role recently, is like
it is.
The people get far more invested in those characters. I mean, I've been considering doing another article based on the fan art aspect of the gaming community and things that have happened. Like when I started listening to Campaign, the One Shot Campaigns podcast, there's a lot of fan art out there about those characters. And people just, they get invested. I have a coworker who, she listens to Critical Role and starts drawing as she's listening to the show and or watching the show and just, like, makes this amazing artwork. So I wonder if there's a bit of a difference between those two, and that may be part of why you haven't gotten some of the darker sides of this.
I think so, too, yeah.
So there's something that you both have said that I'm like, oh, wow, that just makes the structure for all of how my thoughts have been hanging on. Angela, you said the internet has changed so much about gaming because it enables different things. And Cindy, you said this is like people get to see other games being played. You know, I can't think of a pre-internet time where we really had people watching and consuming games as a way to interact with the gaming. You know, you had your D&D, you know, ad page of showing people having fun, you know, sitting there. But that was the end of it. Like, before the internet, before we kind of started recording and playing these, it was all I encounter it with my group at the table. But now, it's almost like these actual plays have opened up the consumerism of it. Like, you're consuming, you know, actual I'm consuming this media rather than I'm engaging with it or I'm using that as a starting point. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think it just changes it. Because like you were saying, Senda, you saw other people doing gaming in a different way and said, oh, like, because I know you ran, you know, D&D 4E beforehand, you know, like that.
No, that was after I already listened to One Shot. Before that, all of my GMing experiences were actually crap. And I was like, I'm never running a game. I'm only a player. Right?
Yeah. But like, it opened it up from how you were intending, you know, or how you were running, because you got to see other people doing it in a different way.
Yeah.
And we've never had that before. But also alongside of that, like listening to podcasts, it was like, oh man, I need to run more indie games. I've been running these campaigns because that's what my friends like. Hey, let me introduce this other one. Oh, I've never heard of that game. That sounds really cool. You know, it does open that up. But I think there's even like Angela was saying, that extra level where this has really kind of hit this momentum of like Twitch, and that you can watch people interacting. And, you know, One Shot are, you know, improvers in Chicago. Critical Role is voice actors playing this in a very polished way. It's a different experience from what you probably get at the table. It's almost like the best possible version of this. All sorts of people who are socially adept can communicate with each other, can play out their characters wonderfully. You know, the rules are there, but they almost take a little bit of a backstory to the narrative they're all sharing, and they're all used to that kind of social interaction. And it's interesting because I'm not sure yet what the lasting effect of that almost golden ideal representation is going to be.
I had a few videos up on YouTube where I had run some actual plays, and the first one that I did was for Marvel Heroic back when that first came out. And to John's point, when he was talking about this, I got so many comments about how the game did not click for people until they watched me running the breakout event in those videos. And it was really interesting to me because I really liked the game, but I also felt like a lot of people weren't getting it. And that is literally why I wanted to run that game online. And there was just like a huge amount of commentary I got. Huge for me. It's like tiny compared to like Senda, but I mean, I got like hundreds of people that watched those videos, and it shocked me that I had that many people coming in and watching those videos and making comments about how either I didn't know this game existed, or I didn't quite understand how the rules worked until I saw this, or I didn't get how you could vary from the original storyline the way, you know, the way that you did with this. And it was really revelatory to me. It was amazing.
I think if you dig back, people have probably been recording gaming as long as video equipment has been available to gamers. But it's in the recent years, with the kind of podcast explosion that's happened, the ease of being able to upload video with YouTube, Twitch coming online to offer that, you know, venue, that's just made it explode. John was mentioning earlier that, like, we never had this before, and I was thinking back, and, like, I can remember finding a book back in the 80s that was a novel about a role-playing game group that ended up getting sucked into their game world. And I can remember finding, like, comics that were, you know, that would go back and forth between that the game at the table and the story of the characters. And I think those are kind of the evolutionary ancestors of actual play. So I think we were heading in that direction anyway, but it's definitely exploded in the last few years.
Well, so there's another piece to this, right? Which is that as gamers, we play these amazing games, just like the ones we talked about in that question at the beginning. And then we're like, oh man, that was so awesome. And no one except me and those five other people is ever going to experience that. And I can't tell the story in a way that is really going to get anyone else to understand it. And so, like, you don't have a way to share it. So, like, there's a drive to do something like record, because then you're like, now I can share this experience with you, which is great.
and that's, like, so this is weird. This is where, like, I put on my Grognard hat a little bit. And it's like, I actually kind of love that nature of it. You know, like, you know, so when I see people sitting down to do an actual play, either podcast or, you know, Twitch and the chat has, I think, changed how people interact with that a lot more, you know. But
I agree.
But when I see that sort of thing, I'm like, oh, cool. I feel like I'm watching a TV show more than I feel like, wait, tell me next what happened in your incredible, collaborative, very messy, very, like, you don't see the stories as much. I mean, you see them, you know, that they have, like, after-action reports, but as much of, like, they went left and killed the ambassador. I had him written out for 50 million more things. Here, you know, like, you don't hear as much of that, you know, seeing the sausage being made. And I kind of love that about the game industry, in that all these little groups are doing all these, like, millions of worlds. And I may only get a glimpse of them when I'm talking to people about it, but I kind of get to hear the raw version of it. I get to hear people telling their own stories rather than sort of like this one story with, like, just epic, everybody watching it and kind of saying, oh, did, you know, it's like, did you see what happened on Game of Thrones last night? You know, okay, that's cool. Like, we're working on that one shared universe together. But rather, I like hearing, you know, like, Angela, you were telling about, like, here's what we did with the lightning rails. And this is where I realized I wasn't actually a lawful character. Like, I don't need this alignment anymore. Let me move on, you know. And you do see some of that, but I feel like there's a layer of polish that obscures that collaborative nature, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. It's just different.
It is different. And it's one of those things that in audio actual plays, I am strongly biased against podcasts that don't edit, right? Like, mm-hmm. I actually have absolutely no interest in listening to your 5-hour recording of your game in which you took bathroom breaks and, like, stopped to eat pizza for half an hour and you just kept all of that in, like, I'm not interested. I'm really spoiled. But I think that that's one of those things also that changes when we start talking about the big production value that we're seeing on Twitch and stuff these days, because they are doing all of that live. They're not taking those breaks because they are doing it in a very professional sense, right?
I think that was an interesting thing, you know, that John brought up there. I actually listen to the Critical Role podcast every week now, and every once in a while I'll watch it online. I usually don't watch it online because it's easier to catch the podcast for me, but I was not following it because what I had seen were the snippets of things that they had posted from time to time. Like when they did their game with Vin Diesel and they posted that, and they did things like, you know, that nature. And I think sometimes people get a different impression of what the actual show is from that sort of thing when you're more of an old school gamer, because watching that Vin Diesel thing, you get this feeling like there are very minimal choices and everyone's acting to the hilt and it's much more about them hamming it up. And, you know, it's not really as much about the game because they have the dry ice all around the studio and all this. And when you watch the actual episodes, there are moments where you have people discussing how, you know, Gash's form does not actually work that way and this whole digression. And honestly, that's why I started watching the game more after it was after they did the Stream of Annihilation, and I actually saw some of these things that Wizards was putting on in that situation, and I went back and started watching the show, and there is a lot more, like, these are gamers. These, yes, they're voice actors, yes, they understand really well pacing and inflection and things like that to keep people interested, but it is actually a game. There are weird roles that come up that everybody's like, what do we do with that? And, you know, just wondering how things have gone off the rails. And I think sometimes people that have been in the hobby have a hard time thinking that that's what it's going to be like. Cause I see so many people say, well, they're actors. It's scripted. No, it's not. It is not scripted. You can see the look on Matt Mercer's face several times when they go completely off the rails from things that he expected. And it looks so much like every other GM that's ever had that look on his face.
I believe that the history of Critical Role is they actually started getting together to game before they started recording. Mm-hmm. And I remember reading about this when I was first looking into the show, but they'd been playing for a while when they finally decided to turn on the cameras and record everything because they were all actors. And I think they actually started with Pathfinder before they switched to 5e.
If you look at the actual, I have the world book that they did for the game setting. It is very funny looking at where it is fused together. Pathfinder, 4th edition D&D, 5th edition D&D. To use a Marvel analogy, it is like the battle world of multiple D20 things fused together by Matt Mercer as the Beyonder. So,
well, you know, to a certain degree, that is also kind of modeling real-life game, you know, real-life gaming anyway. Because we're talking about trying to convert my Pathfinder game into 5e, because we're like, we're over Pathfinder. We like 5e better. Can we translate this? Yeah, but how do you make a gunslinger in 5e?
Well, I translated that 4e game that I was running into Fate, so I'm totally with you.
Yeah, but Fate, you can just have Aspect Gunslinger and you're done.
Exactly. Well, like we'll just make it up. But yes, that is the way that campaigns actually work.
Yeah, Jared, speak. Grognard hat back on, speaking as the, like, the person who's in the industry, I think that is exactly my opinion of it. I have watched a few episodes, and I've seen a lot of sort of the flubs, and the Magnificent Mansion episode was the one, you know, I saw where it's like, all right, this is pure, the character has Magnificent Mansion and wants to play that. Like, that is the justification for them having the spell. Let's all talk about it. So it's just people exploring this mansion and these sort of, you know, role-playing things. And I'm like, oh, wow, this is kind of awesome and incredible. And it does have that moment. But then there is all that extra stuff that, you know, God, the polish of, like, you know, Stream of Many Eyes. It's like, wow, I never thought D&D would get to that level. And the other show that I always think of when I think of kind of actual plays, Harmon Quest, if you've ever seen that, where they actually animate it, you know.
Yeah.
It's still these flubs and these dice rolls and sort of things, and oh, I don't know how I'm going to do that. But it definitely feels just a little different. You see where kind of they've got, here are the notes we want to hit. And like you were saying, Senda, yeah, if I'm watching somebody's, you know, homebrew great game and it's going to be 6 hours and I'm like, actually cut it down to the interesting bits to me because I am not playing in this. You know, even when I play in games, I'm like, this is one of those boring times where we're just trying to get past this. Come on, DM, just move us along. But it's like, nope.
Just smash cut.
Yeah, like, but it's like, nope. I, as a player, need to just shut up and let somebody else play out their fun. Those kind of bits get cut out of the more polished ones, which isn't, you know, sometimes like you're saying, you know, Jared, you've probably watched more, you're definitely more versed with it than I have. So I am kind of an outsider to the critter community, but yeah, it is different. There is a different connotation when all you see is kind of the fandom and not the thing that generated the fandom.
You know, one thing I'm curious about, and, you know, I don't know that there's any way to, like, investigate this and prove whether or not it's true or not, but one of the things I find actual plays do, especially when they have high production values or good editing in that they show you the good bits of both the game and the play, is that it models good gaming. You know, whether it's the role-playing from the players or how to actually bring that game to life through the system. Because, like, you know, as Jared said, with your putting Marvel Heroic on YouTube, people actually figured out how that was supposed to work. I got it into my head that I wanted to run a session of Headspace at a con before the game was out. So I went to She's a Super Geek and listened to the Headspace episode to go, oh, okay, this is what this is.
Bombshell.
She was the best,
best
of us.
Best of us.
But because I know that Critical Role is drawing in these new players who are discovering Critical Role and then getting themselves into gaming, like my coworker, I know she had dipped her toe in the water of gaming, but it was Critical Role that made her, you know, dive headfirst into the waters. Are people coming into it with a better understanding of how they should be interacting with the game? Because you've all run games where you've gotten that new player who's just kind of like a deer in the headlights of the oncoming car, and you have to slowly coax them into interacting with the game and interacting with the world. Whereas if people are coming in with a better understanding of what gaming is from these actual plays, you know, is that changing how the newbies are coming into the hobby?
I think yes, in two ways. And the first one is it can be exactly what you're describing. And like I said earlier, like listening to the One Shot podcast changed the way that I thought about GMing and then turned me into a GM, right? So I know that it can teach people things. Like if you're walking in and you're like, oh, wow, and you see it and you're like, that's amazing. And it looks like so much fun. And I know that I can do it like that. And I know now when I read the rules, like I have an idea of what that's supposed to sound like and look like and what that means. So on the one side, I think that it is really good for that. On the other side, I think that there is a percentage of people who will take something that is super polished and like is that sort of golden,
right,
like outstanding, like when everything is perfect, it looks like this, and will try to start a game and then be disappointed that their game doesn't look like that, right?
That's a dark side of the coin.
Yeah.
Right. That's the inverse of that. And I think, as a podcaster who does actual play, it's important to me that while my shows are edited, that what you get from the show is hopefully still enough of the realism of playing a game that it doesn't give you like bad expectations of what to see at your table. Right.
Yeah. There's also one part, and I hate to be negative about this, but this is like kind of coming from personal experiences I've had that is kind of interesting. Gaming is a really unique, different form of media. Like everything else is consumed, this is created while being consumed. And I think that will always be kind of a barrier to a new player to kind of understand how to interact with other people. So like, I think back to myself when I was like a young teenager and reading the Dragonlance books and I hadn't gotten into a game yet. And man, if I got into a game at that point, only having read that and, you know, written my fan fiction about the Child of Destiny who was born under the... Had I been a player at that point, people would have hated me, and rightfully so, because I hadn't yet figured out how to play with other people and kind of emphasize their characters. I think I learned that quickly amongst gaming, but... About a year back, I was trying to build a new group of like, you know, some other people in the community where I'd moved to. And so I was going to meetups and I was running these games. And out of like one game that I was a player in, a guy came up and played, and he was all he could talk about was Critical Role and how much he loved it. And he did not personally have kind of the social awareness to let anybody else take a turn, to say that kind of bluntly. But he wanted to do everything they had done on the show. That group eventually ended the meetup game, quote unquote, and reformed without him, to be kind and not just kick him out. And I had a similar experience with another player where like the other four players in the game were like, if you invite him to the full game, we're not playing. And I felt bad because I'm like, this is the sort of thing that can help somebody like that, like understand the social. But I think there's almost a comfort level in consuming it without participating in it that you know, some people haven't yet figured out how to participate in the big group social structure, but they're drawn to it because they see, wow, this is phenomenal. Look at all these people interacting. I want that. They just don't quite know. And that's where it becomes very conflicted, because I'm like, I want my games to help people do that.
To a certain degree, though, I think that's always, as long as gaming has been around, there has been a degree of that issue, because that guy 20 years ago would have showed up to the table wanting to be Raistlin or Dritz.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, he you know, his behavior probably would have been the same. His focus would have just been on the characters he consumed in the gaming-related media rather than the actual play. A different form of introduction to the world, so to speak.
Yeah, I have a local gamer that has shown up in games at the FLGS and at the conventions. And he was very excited about Powered by the Apocalypse games because if he read that, you know, if he does a thing, then that triggers these things. And he did not understand that interaction of handing off to other people. He was constantly interjecting himself. And it isn't a thing against, you know, what you were saying, John, but it wasn't a matter of him seeing that in actual plays. It's just he didn't get that give and take. He just saw on the page, if I do a thing, I'm the center of attention and it triggers a move. And he was just hitting that button all the time and never handing off to anyone else.
Yeah. And I think that's absolutely right. You know, sort of say I have to beware of my Grindhard hat in this, you know, because I think,
get off my lawn.
Damn clouds. No, I think this has been around forever. I think there's just been such a boom and such a polish level to it. It's pulling in so many more people that's kind of becoming, you know, how most people, you know, everybody, how'd you get into gaming? Oh, a friend ran D&D for me. D&D was the gateway, but then you got into indie games or different narrative games. I think this is the new version of that, and I think it comes with its own kind of challenges, because you're right, I want to be the center of attention. I'm spamming this. You know, I can sit there and watch these actual plays or listen to them and imagine myself in them. But everybody's a self-centered person. We have a hard time. We have to learn that. And I haven't figured out how to kind of blend that enthusiasm and excitement with the rest of sort of gaming and kind of move people in, unless it's like, I'm going to run a game for all new game players. Let's all learn this together, you know? And yeah. It's just one of those, like, it's a good problem to have that we have too many more new people coming in. It's also just like, how do we make this good for them and good for everybody else in the industry as well?
Yeah.
We're starting to go a little long, and even though Chris doesn't edit us anymore, he's going to be angry if we end up becoming a Pandas Talking Game style short podcast.
Quote, short form, end quote.
So we should probably, anybody, last thoughts before we move into our outro.
I think you should just start killing off characters, Angela. That'll be great.
But I like them. I don't want them to die.
I don't know. You killed somebody in the last game you ran for me, so.
Yeah, but that was a superhero game. She wasn't really dead.
I know. We're going to finish. We're gonna bring that back. No spoilers. Yeah. No spoilers.
I guess my last thoughts are, I think overall, it's a super positive thing and good. It's just very interesting because I don't think the game industry has had something this large in this kind of medium yet, so there's new ground to be tread here.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
I would say, for my last thought about it, that I actually think that having media that people can consume as part of our gaming community is a really powerful tool that we can all use, but I think that we also need to have some awareness about how it's used and, you know, what we do with it.
The only thing that I would add to this whole discussion is I think sometimes when people look at the popularity and why some of these things work, they look very much at the person running the game and they don't look at the fact that, and this is true across all games, the games are good because you have a group of people, the players, that are good at feeding things back to the person running the game. It would not be as good if you had an awesome GM and a bunch of people that just sat there. And that is, I think it gets lost, but I think it's very evident if you look at the most popular of all of these actual play games.
Hear, hear.
Yeah.
Agree. Mm-hmm.
So, moving into our outro, this show is funded by the Gnome Stew Patreon. You too can become a Patreon backer by following the Patreon link on the Gnome Stew website to the Gnome Stew Patreon. This ad is brought to you by the Cyberpunk Future of Gaming, actual virtual reality play, where not only do you get to experience the game as if you were actually playing it, you get to experience all the other nuances of gaming, like rolling the worst possible result at the most dramatic moment and needing to ask, where's the Mountain Dew? If you're enjoying the Gnomecast, you'll probably like many of the other Misdirected Mark shows. Here's one to check out.
On the Misdirected Mark podcast, Chris, Phil, and Bob go live every Tuesday evening at 8:45 Eastern, 6:45 p.m. the Queen's time, to break down and get inside gaming, game mastering, playing games, and game design in an effort to entertain and inform you. I guess those guys are pretty okay.
Yeah, they're pretty okay. You can find all of us at GnomeStew.com, at GnomeStew on Twitter, and GnomeStew on Facebook. Gnomes, where else can we find you on the internet? Jared, you go first.
You can find my personal blog at knighterrantjr.blogspot.com. I'm at knighterrant_JR on Twitter. And if you look up Jared Rasher on YouTube, you can find those actual play things that I mentioned earlier.
John, you go.
I can be found wherever good John Arcadians are bartered or sold. It's a pretty unique name, so go find it. I would also push people, since it's now out and on YouTube, go look at my TED Talk on social play and tabletop role-playing games.
Yeah, that's a good reference for this.
Senda!
Oh boy. So you can find me on Twitter at IDELLAMITHLYNND. They are all laughing at me because my Twitter handle is an ongoing joke. So you can find me on Twitter there. Twitter is where I spend most of my time. You can actually also find my actual play podcast, She's a Super Geek, on Twitter at SassGeek Podcast or at SassGeek.com. And you can catch new episodes of that bi-weekly every Tuesday. Right now, our next episode will come out on the 24th of August.
Angela, where can we find you?
You can find me at Twitter, at Orikes13, O-R-I-K-E-S-13, and pretty much other misdirected Mark Gnome Stew community stuff. I'm around. So, hey, John, did we avoid the stew this week?
I don't know. If there's anything I've learned from all this, it's that killing characters off generates a lot of buzz. So, marketing?
Not it.
I mean, should we at least do it live on a stream?
Let's do an actual play, Hunger Games style, to see who gets to win.
Gnomecast is hosted by Misdirected Mark Productions, the media arm of Encoded Designs.
Never mind, I'm just not going to finish that sentence. Cut that out, Rob. Fix it. Rob, fix it.